Thank you. This is weird, isn't it? This is really weird. I mean, this is un-Baptist right here, what's happening. The pulpit, the pulpit is maybe one step over the height of the door back there, which is very Baptist. We don't speak over each other. We don't, Lord, no one's higher than another. But right now, because the room rakes, this is not very Baptist. And I think that's okay. And I thank you for moving and for not making this a game, but being lighthearted about it and being open to whatever it is that God's moving in us. Because one thing I know with confidence, you cannot stay where you were and expect to grow. You cannot expect new faith to be delivered to you like room service. It doesn't work that way. You have to move. We cannot stay and dial up one of those cool new businesses. Have you seen the new businesses around town? You know, if you live near this place, you can call or use an app on your phone and in 30 or 40 minutes have a meal from your favorite restaurant delivered to you. Did you know that? You pull out your phone, you push this thing, and you agree to add $5, and you can have Mahdi's delivered here or wherever you are in 30 minutes. Top-notch onions, onion rings, I love those, or Amy's ice cream. All you have to do is push the button, pay $5, rub your stomach, stare out the window, lick your lips, and it's delivered to you. But you can't do that here. You cannot do that with your faith. It doesn't work this way. Faith requires growth. It requires nurturing, and relationships move. Have you had a friendship with anyone where neither of you ever changed? Me either. Can you think of anyone in history? I think it's a statue. And you can actually have a rapport with a statue. If you've seen people move to Lincoln on the mall, they are interacting. So maybe even the person is moving in the statue. Maybe one of us can. You have to move. And today's text does not move me. It does not. It is paper thin for me. And it was when I was a kid, and it's not any deeper now. Matthew 6, 1 through 6. This is a hard one to squeeze any meaning out of. It's never been one of my favorite. And when you lay it down next to stewardship, it falls with a thud that has no echo. Thump. That text Melissa read, I want to try to squeeze into some twang, which is what I have left over of that text. When you pray, don't go standing on the stump down at the corner shouting so your prayers can be heard by everybody standing around. Instead, stuff yourself in the closet and whisper your prayers to God. That's what's left of that text for me at this point. And then put stewardship up there. Like I said, it's parched. I almost want to grab this water back here because it's so dry. I think I get why the author of our stewardship series picked this text. I think what the point he's trying to get across to us is that our giving should not be loud or proud. That point is made pretty quick. I get it. I even agree. Narcissism is a deadly way to give and a deadly way to live. But I think you get it too, which kind of puts us in a place right here. Where do we go from here? You all get this, right? Not one of you picks up a microphone and broadcasts what you give or how you live your faith, do you? Nope. Not one of you signs your checks to the church like John Hancock, scrolling it out really huge, right? So how many years later we're still talking about that, guys? None of you do that. There isn't one of us in the church house like that, which has left me scratching my head since the last time I stood here trying to squeeze out whatever it is God has for us here to hear and to speak and to learn from this text this day. It's taken a lot of porch sitting and listening and visiting to get a handle on this one today. Between shouting and whispering. Between the stump on the street corner and the dark, quiet closet. Surely, between those two wildly different places, there's a table, right? You gotta walk by a table somewhere when you move in from the street to the, I hope you do. And that, for me, is where there is salvation in this text. You walk by a table. when we pray around a table, or when you pray with people and you hold hands in a circle and you hear each other lift gently a prayer upward, something happens. Something happens to me. I love to hear you pray. I love to hear our children pray. I thank you for your prayer this morning. Where'd you go, Melissa? Thank you. I'm afraid Cheryl and I do a huge disservice to you all by doing most of the out loud praying around here. The variety of our voices, the unique ways you talk to God, we all talk to God, the different rhythms of our speaking, the wild word choices you have, the fresh perspectives, they're all so inviting, they're all so engaging, that draws us together. It draws me closer both to the one who's praying, the one speaking, and to the one to whom we are speaking together. What if the larger goal of stewardship season is moving us closer to God, closer to each other, like you've moved this morning, moving toward God? Focusing on money and time and talent is just too small now. We know it's not enough. Don't get me wrong, we need metrics. We need to measure where we are and how we're doing and where we're going and where we've been. But the speedometer isn't the goal. And the tape measure is just a tool. The budget, the clock, the calendar are just goals in our living on our way toward God, toward one another. What if we took this stewardship season to take an honest look at how far in we are? How far in we are to this family of faith? How far into your own skin you are? How far in you are to your life? I was talking a little bit about this to Joe, trying to get a handle on what this sermon does. And Joe says, Wednesday night, off the top of my head, you said, off the top of your head, you said, I figure I have about 7,000 days left to live. 7,000 days. How many more do you have? What are you going to do with your days left? This is where we are right now. Now what? We've been given so much. You've been given so much. I've been given so much. And yet our potential, well, our toenail hadn't even gotten in yet, has it? One time my sister was here in town, and she brought with her my brother-in-law and my niece, and they live in Missouri, and it was one of the first falls that I was here in Austin. I think it's 98, and it was hot. You know how August can be terrible hot. And in Missouri, it gets a little bit muggy, but you don't dial it up to 1,000 and leave it there. They came down here, and we went to Mount Bonnell, and we were dripping, and we went around town, all the cool places you go around, and we were just dying. The fun had been wrung literally out of us. What are we going to do? Barton Springs. I love Barton Springs. At the time, I lived in a townhome on the hill above Barton Springs. Let's walk down to Barton Springs. It's cold, and it will fix this heat, and it always had before. So we go down there, and then my sister did one of those things that an older sister can do, or a brother, I guess, too. She gave me a double dog dare. Most of the time, when I go down to Barton Springs, I go around the other side and hit that diving board, and poof, all at once. Yeah, whoa, you know, it shakes, it's cold, but it's over with, and you're in, and oh, it feels good. My sister double dog dared me. I'd never done this before. I don't know if she knew I hadn't done it before. I don't know if she'd done this before. She said, start at that end and walk in. Work your way in from there. Okay. My niece was there. She's a few years older than our girls are now. You don't want to back out when you get a double dog dare in front of your niece, and it's just a swimming pool, and I've been in this water a ton of times. I had no idea what she was asking me to do, but my first foot, that first step in, it hurt. It was cold. And then I knew that I had to do that all the way up to my eyebrow. It took an hour to get in. I'm not lying. It took an hour. Every slow, slippery step was just painful, and it just, and they're down there laughing. They're in the deep end, jumping off the high back and forth, and my sister's got that smile, which your sister or someone you know has given you that darn smile. It took me almost all the time that we gave that day to Barton Springs to finally get myself in that pool. I love to jump in the pool. I love to jump into the deep end of the pool. You know, I live, though. I live more like that day. One foot. Sometimes I even catch a glimpse of one of you or someone out there in the deep end. Yeah. One foot. What am I afraid of? What are you afraid of? I told you a story a couple of years ago. I want to tell you again. It's a story Wesley told me on a Wednesday night. He told me the story. Then we went up to the office and he pulled it up on the video on the computer. I think it was a YouTube video. There'd been a news reporter did a story on this lady and a science teacher and the assistant principal. The science teacher was in his first year. His name's Michael Boone. And he's in his very first year of teaching. And Kim Hodge is the assistant principal, and she has kidney failure. Do you remember the story, y'all, some of you? Kim had been living without kidneys since July. And her sister said in the interview, well, she's been living kidney-free, which is a pretty darn hard way to go, hard way to live. It's an impossible way. Kim, to stay alive, had to spend 4 hours almost daily hooked up to a dialysis machine to clean her blood, to give her strength. And when she went in, she was exhausted. And she waited all that time, and it would give her back some of her energy. And all this time, she stayed working at Westwood High, often 60 to 70 hours. She still worked at Westlake High. Since July, I probably had the hardest month of my life, she told a local newspaper reporter and the video people that were there. She had tears in her eyes. She said, I felt like I was slowly dying, to be honest with you. Not long after the report, Kim was talking in the hallway to some of her teacher friends. She's telling them about what it's like to live on dialysis and how exhausting that is, to stop what you're doing to go sit and wait. She was telling them what it's like to wait for somebody to give you a kidney. And while she's telling all this, Michael Boone walks by and he notices what's going on. He kind of listens in, didn't say anything. Michael went home that evening and called his dad. His dad is a doctor. He says, Dad, this is kind of random, but one of my coworkers needs a kidney transplant. How's that work? In the days that followed, Boone says he felt God give him two signs, clearly two signs. The first came while he was visiting a friend downtown. He said, I walked up, and on the second story, on the concrete, right in front of the top step, right in front of me, were two words, Kim Hodge. What? The second sign came when he was fishing in East Austin. One of the things he does to kind of relax is to go over and fish on the other side of 35. Then he's sitting there by himself fishing when all of a sudden he hears a lot of commotion. And when you're fishing, you don't really want a lot of commotion around you, right? You like for it to be still. It's kind of relaxing. What in the world? He looks up a little bit agitated, and he sees hundreds of people walking on that path right toward him. What in the world? It was a march to raise funds and awareness for kidney transplants. Oh, that's kind of weird, he says. I got to take this more seriously. It was like I needed to pray some more, think some more about it. It's what he says in this video. And so after more thought and more prayer, Michael took the test, and he learned that he was a match. And then one day after school, he went to Kim Hodge's door. We don't know each other very well, but I'd like to give you my kidney. Kim can barely express her gratitude in this video. I can't imagine being his age and telling someone, I want to give you my kidneys. 2 years ago, this month, after being on the transplant list for 3 years, that transplant was made, and both of them are doing well. We saw both of them at graduation later that year, for Christina and Wesley's graduation in May. Michael says, it's been a spiritual journey for me. I felt like God was just laying it on my heart. You know, that's the thing, you know. When you give someone a really good gift, you know, you're just so excited about it yourself. You just feel it. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, he says. And I caught myself sitting next to Wesley, looking at that computer, nodding, yeah, Mike, I know, I get it. I understand what you're saying. And I found myself talking back out loud. Michael didn't really want to be interviewed. He didn't want this news to get out there. He didn't do it for that. But they finally convinced him. People kept saying, you got to tell this story, man. You got to tell this story. Finally, someone, an interviewer, convinced him. They changed his mind when he thought his story might help someone else understand how God works in his life. He was not shouting on a stump at the end of the street. He was not whispering in the dark closet alone. Who knows how many people this story has helped? It helped me. It helps me still, and it confounds me, really, if I were to tell you the truth. It sticks to me. I heard this story in 2013, and it's still just as vivid and real to me right now as it was. It helps that I've seen those folks and shaken their hands and know people that have been touched by them, but I still can't get my mind around this. Is it really that easy to give away a kidney? I mean, that seems huge to me. And so I asked Teresa Knuckles. You know, she sits here. She grows up with us here. Still growing up, right? We're not done. So I asked her Wednesday night. She gave her kidney to her brother about 15 years ago. And she said almost the exact same thing, which doesn't surprise any of you that know her, I bet. I didn't really give it a second thought, she said. It's just what you do, she said. I didn't really think it was a big deal. Once I learned that I was a match, there wasn't much more to talk about or really to think about. It's not a big deal. And that's how she speaks of this. What happens to us when we give large? Hearts enlarged, faith is stretched and grows. And not just the generous person, but everyone. Creation entire really feels the ripple. Years later from this story, and years later, 15, from Teresa, and the ripple is still going. The impact of this generosity still quickens my spirit, just to mention them. There is no question in my mind, something extraordinary happens when we choose generosity like this. Something extraordinary happens to the creation entire. Well, I wonder what happens when we don't choose generosity. Do our hearts shrink and harden a bit? Does it get harder to hear God and to hear each other? Do we find growing distances like the space that was between us at the beginning of this worship service? Maybe stewardship season this year gives us a chance to see where we are right now, and gives us a chance again to move someplace else. If you have your eyes on just the money this stewardship season, then that is all you will ever see, and I promise it will not be enough. What if the larger goal of stewardship is to draw us all closer together, closer to God, closer to everyone? So where are you right now? Where do you want to be? I have a poem I want to read. Will you click that poem up there, Gary? One more click. Listen, O drop. Give yourself up without regret, and in exchange gain the ocean. Listen, O drop. Bestow upon yourself this honor, and in the arms of the sea be secure. Who indeed should be so fortunate? An ocean wooing a drop? In God's name, in God's name, sell and buy at once. Give a drop and take this sea full of pearls.